Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Berkshire Conference Call. This call is with John Perna. John Perna is one of our most knowledgeable members of the John Birch Society. I'm fortunate that he lives in South Carolina, the state where I live, and I get to work with him quite a bit. He is one I go to when I have questions about the history of the John Birch Society. And today I wanted him to talk about a lady by the name of Julia Brown. And she passed away a few years ago, but she made quite an impact during her lifetime. And I often share information about her when I'm on social media because so many people get the history of the civil rights movement wrong. And it's so refreshing that a lady from Cincinnati, a black woman, was so correct in the way she went about educating people about what should be done, and she had realized that the civil rights movement was not a movement she wanted to be part of, even though initially she had been part of it. But when she found out that it was a bad organization, you know, bad movement to be part of, she started to expose it. But John, thank you for joining me again for another Berkshire conference call. It's always a pleasure.
Yes. I met Julia Brown at the 25th anniversary banquet of the John Birch Society in Indianapolis, Indiana. That was over 25 years ago. We've had our 50th anniversary banquet back then. And I remember something that she said that I've quoted her on many times. And, of course, this has come about, but she said she didn't mind getting old because it was far superior to the only alternative, which is dying young.
Right,
but
right.
She did pass away now.
She had a great attitude. I mean, that whenever I've seen a speech by her, she was a very positive lady. And, you know, a lot of people in the John Birch Society were influenced by her. What do you remember when you met her? I mean, is there anything else that stood out to you about her?
Well, the thing that really is her raison d'etre is that she worked for the FBI. She was an undercover agent for the FBI who learned about communist influences in various different organizations. And exposed the communist influence. Now, we actually do, even though she has passed away now, we actually do have videos of presentations made by Julia Brown where she talks about the things that she learned as an undercover agent for the FBI. And there are excerpts from things that she said in films, other films that are focused on the same issue. We have a film called Anarchy USA, which was produced very early in the formation of the John Birch Society. I remember the first meeting that I ever went to for the John Birch Society. There was a literature table at the back of the room, and there was lots of literature there, but there were only two authors. One was Robert Welch, and the other one was G. Edward Griffin. And back in those times when we were first getting started, we had a tremendous amount of literature, but not so many people writing. Julia Brown goes back to those early days when we produced Anarchy USA. That was, of course, narrated by G. Edward Griffin. And, of course, we've got other people in there. Manning Johnson is another one that made an impact in exposing what happened. By the way, I'd like to wish everybody a happy Robert E. Lee's birthday. Robert E. Lee was born on January 19th, but we celebrate it on the third Monday of January. That's today.
Well, so for those that don't know Julia Brown, who she was, she ended up testifying against the creation of a federal holiday named after Martin Luther King. And today, a lot of people are celebrating Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It's a federal holiday. But Julia Brown was, I think, the only black woman that testified against it. But lead us down the path, John, of how did she get into this? You know, what was it that got her into working for the FBI, and what did she see that very few others could figure out?
You know, if she was here, she'd be able to answer that question. As far as what her history was before she came to be famous, I'm not exactly sure. But of course, being a black woman who was an anti-communist, and during those days, there was a wider acceptance of communism during among black people. In fact, there were other pieces of literature that I have that the John Birch Society used to distribute. I don't know if they're still available, but there's one little brochure called "To the Negroes in a Soviet America," for instance, and it was written by a communist, a black communist, who was talking about how great things would be for black people after the United States became a communist country. Which, of course, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., he had connections to a lot of those people. You can't, I'm not going to use the logical fallacy of guilt by association, because he had an association with Carl and Ann Braden and James Dombrowski, and those were actual communists in Louisville, Kentucky, and he attended a school in Mount Eagle, Tennessee, called Highlander Folk School, and that was a school that was actually run by communists. And one of the things that has been lauded about, we used to have a postcard with it, with a picture of Martin Luther King sitting there on the front row, with everybody on that row was a member of the Communist Party. The thing about Martin Luther King, you can't necessarily assume that he was a communist, but he did have connections. He did have associations with communists. And I do believe that he sincerely did want to elevate the condition of the black American, and not necessarily working to bring them into a dictatorship. Although I think that his assassination was done for the purpose of creating civil unrest. He was a leader. His goal was to create a mass movement, which he did. And then, after he created that mass movement, the communists wanted to convert that mass movement into a communist revolution. I don't think Martin Luther King was useful to them in that regard. And so they needed him out of the way, and wanted other people like Rap Brown and Stokely Carmichael and other leaders at that time to take over the movement that Martin Luther King had created. I quote Martin Luther King on some of the things that he says. You got to give credit where credit is due. One thing that I quote Martin Luther King on is something he said. He said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And he is absolutely correct in that. And of course, quoting him on one statement that he made that was correct is not an endorsement of everything else he did in his whole life. And in fact, he said, and those that are listening to his words today, which there are, will be many people who are listening to his words today, will probably hear some of the presentations that he made. One of them, he said, it's not just about black folks, it's everybody's rights. And if you are interested in everybody's rights, then you are truly in favor of civil rights, which a lot of people today, they look upon the movement, which is referred to as a civil rights movement, as a movement to not create more rights, but to create privileges. And the movement for privileges for black people is called civil rights, although if it's a right, it's everybody's rights. And Martin Luther King said that. It's not just about black people, it's everybody's rights. And I think that that is a central concept, that if it were understood by those who are involved in what is referred to as civil rights, it would truly be a civil rights movement, a movement for individual liberty for individuals. Mm-hmm. But many times what we see, which is being referred to as civil rights, is a demand for government to take more power and spend more money and interfere in people's lives more. The ability of an individual to govern his own life is what civil rights truly is. But when you say that you cannot govern your own life because you have to do this or that according to some government regulation or law, then you are actually working against civil rights.
So let's go into the book I Testify by Julia Brown. This is a book you have in front of you. You have a copy.
Yes, right.
And when was this book published?
Well, it was published by Western Islands, actually, which is the I don't know if there were any earlier publications of the book before it was published by Western Islands, but Western Islands is the publication company that is run by the John Birch Society. Let me see if I can see a copyright date here. Got to get a magnifying glass to read this.
And describe to people what is the book about in summary?
Yeah, copyright is 1966.
Okay.
The John Birch Society was founded in 1958. So at this point, we were pretty new in terms of what we were doing. And basically, this is a summary of the things that she learned while working for the FBI and trying to counteract the influence of subversive organizations, communism primarily. But the thing, J. Edgar Hoover was the director of the FBI during that time. And we all looked upon J. Edgar Hoover as a good guy, that he was trying to stop the communist subversion in the United States.
Right.
But we turned our heads on some of the things that he did that we probably should have opposed. One was something called COINTELPRO. He created COINTELPRO. Mm-hmm. COINTELPRO is a shortened, a one-word description of something called counterintelligence program. And counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO, was something that where the FBI basically worked to create division inside of subversive organizations. And we didn't find anything wrong with that at the time because it was only being used against the subversive organizations. At this time, when during the Obama administration, for instance, the FBI was still involved in COINTELPRO, and they were using this kind of thing to create division inside of organizations that were actually defending the Constitution. We have another member of the John Birch Society. He's also passed away, Delmar Dennis, who was a part of the FBI program to infiltrate and learn about intelligence and also to change the direction of another subversive organization, which was the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. The FBI actually had operatives that were working in the people who create division inside the United States on both sides of an issue. You know, the very first meeting of the John Birch Society that I went to, I had very little knowledge of what the John Birch Society was about, and I had heard a lot of things that I thought were true. And I, at the first meeting that I went to, I said, well, there are some things that I don't agree with that the John Birch Society believes in. And the host said, oh, well, what is that? And I was choosing my words very carefully, trying not to offend. And I said, the communists use class struggle as a basis for their revolution. and they turn people against one another. The class struggle, the original class struggle, was the proletariat versus the bourgeoisie, basically wealthy people fighting against poor people. And that kind of a class struggle is only effective where there is a fixed class. In other words, if you have an aristocracy or a caste system, which are the privileged class, and then there are other people who are not in the privileged class who are being taxed or oppressed or something or other like that, then it's possible for the communists to create a class struggle that is based on economic situation, economic class. But in a case where there's free movement from one class to another, in other words, like if your grandfather was a poor immigrant who came here to the United States and worked real hard and sent your father to college, and then your father was a young professional who worked real hard and saved his money and sent his children to medical school or law school, and they worked real hard and saved their money and made a very luxurious life for his children, who grew up in the lap of luxury and just basically spent the fortune of the family and never got a hard working job. Then you go from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. And it's not possible to create a class struggle based on economic status, economic class, where your own family a few generations ago was in a different socioeconomic class than you are. And so the other type of class struggle that is created inside of countries where there is not a fixed aristocracy or a caste system of some sort is based on other types of divisions. In other words, the class struggle in the United States is largely black against white, but it's also young against the old and man versus woman, and different religions are used as the promulgation of class struggle. Islam is one now that is coming to be a part of our society, where there's and was much more important factor in some countries. In Ireland, it's the Catholics against the Protestants. But these class struggles, they have agents provocateurs that will work inside of each one. In other words, there'll be someone who is trying to create hatred and division between various different groups on both sides. And getting back to what I was started off saying about my first interaction with the John Birch Society, I was trying to be very careful about not offending my host by pointing these things out about how the communists use class struggle, and how I said that, you know, racism and anti-Semitism, things of that sort, is playing right into the hands of the communists, because that's what they're trying to do, is create a class struggle. And she said, "My goodness, you have never had any contact with the John Birch Society before today, and you already know all those things? How did you learn all that?" And I was taken aback and said, "You mean that's what the John Birch Society believes?" I said, she said, "Yes, that's what we teach, exactly." And so I was quite surprised and somewhat relieved to find out that the John Birch Society was not a Ku Klux Klansman with ties on or something rather like that, that they actually, in fact, one of the things that I learned real early on is that if there is anybody in the John Birch Society who falls into that kind of thing, they'll be put out of the John Birch Society instantly. In fact, over the more than 50 years of membership in the John Birch Society, I have seen the John Birch Society very quickly remove several people who started going down that road of anti-Semitism or racism, and they go very quickly.
Well, there's a lot you've learned all these years. You've been so fortunate to meet people like Julia Brown, and did you ever get a chance to meet Delmar Dennis?
Oh yes, Delmar Dennis was a very good close friend of mine, which he went to John Birch Society summer youth camp some, which I used to go to all every year when we had them. And Delmar Dennis was from Tennessee, or lived in Tennessee at the time he was going to those camps. Now, there's a movie that is made about what Delmar Dennis did, but doesn't mention Delmar Dennis at all, and actually makes up a new narrative for how it was carried out. The movie is called Mississippi Burning. When Delmar Dennis was in Mississippi and he was a member of the Ku Klux Klan as an undercover operative, he actually got the evidence that resulted ultimately in the conviction of Byron Della Beckwith for the killing of what was his name? A black person. And but he was in the meeting, in the Ku Klux Klan meeting, when he bragged about having killed him, and that was part of the evidence that actually brought it together to convict him. But Delmar Dennis didn't go into the witness protection after he testified against the Ku Klux Klan. He didn't go into witness protection. Guess where he went? He went on the staff of the John Birch Society. He was a coordinator for the John Birch Society for years, and ultimately went off on his own.
Yeah. And Delmar Dennis, if I remember from what I've learned, his the family he married into, because he, did what he did, pretty much, I think his wife left him, right?
I
Is
don't
that
really
correct?
know that. You
Yeah.
know,
Okay.
we had a national council member who knew Delmar Dennis a whole lot better than I did. Tom, let me see, what was his name? Gosh.
Well, yeah, what I was trying to get to is people, the sacrifice he made, because he pretty much cut off ties with the people he had built strong relationships with when he did that,
Yes.
and people need to take note of how heroic these people were. Julia Brown, we had a man on the podcast not too long ago, former field coordinator out of Louisiana, and he had said that Julia Brown had traveled into his area, and she didn't trust anything at a restaurant that was made for her because she was afraid she was going to be poisoned.
Oh
So
yeah.
she always made somebody else drink from her cup before she took a drink, so that she would know that the coffee was, or whatever she had ordered, was not poisoned.
Yes. Well,
Yeah.
Delmar Dennis actually wrote a book, which I have several autographed copies of that, and it's called To Stand Alone. That title is exactly what you were referring to with regard to becoming basically somebody who has to stand alone. Because when you take a stand like the one they took, you must be willing to stand alone, because you can't trust anyone. You never know what's going to happen. And of course, there, it's not at all uncommon. People talk about the leaders of all the patriotic anti-communist movements that have passed away. And in many instances, you just don't know whether or not their death was an accident or a suicide or a murder. And there's, if you go into Google and put in Clinton body count and find out how many mysterious deaths there were of people who were associated with the Clintons, Jeffrey Epstein being the most notable recent death,
Sure.
which is lauded as a suicide. But there's a lot of things about that don't add up. You know, he supposedly hung himself, but the place on his neck where the abrasion is not up high where it would be if he was hanging, but down low, like he had been strangled. And there was no blood on the thing that was supposedly used to hang him, and the neck had blood on it. But beyond that, Vince Foster is another one. When a person dies, they bleed for a little while until their heart stops pumping. And Vince Foster was found in that park, no blood, where he supposedly shot himself. But and you know, there's a tremendous number of other people that are like that. There were three Secret Service agents that were on the campaign trail with Bill Clinton and saw the kind of things that Bill Clinton did, and they were transferred to the BATF and sent in to the Branch Davidians and went through an upstairs window. And then another person came up to that window, which before they went in, they had already thrown a grenade into the room, so the room was empty. And they went in to that room, and the other one came up and started shooting into the room. And those were the
Killed.
three that were killed.
Wow. Well, I learned something new during this call, which is often the case when I talk to you, John. Well, you know, there's so much good information people can find out, you know, just by studying the John Birch Society material. If you watch YouTube videos, there's the video "I Testify" by Julia Brown. If you just type that into YouTube, "I Testify" by Julia Brown, a great YouTube video. There's also one titled "Julia Brown Explains Communist Riots and Deception." So if you type that into YouTube, here it is again. Julia Brown Explains Communist Riots and Deception. That brings up a 5-minute video for you that is an excellent one to watch. And then you'd explained earlier the movie Anarchy USA that the John Birch Society created back in the 60s. It's available on YouTube. You can go to the John Birch Society YouTube channel to watch that video, but it's one that features Julia Brown. And it's an incredible one to watch. It's just it's really breathtaking because, especially if you're new to this, because you realize how the what we're taught in the public school system. So many of us that have gone through it, I was one of those. You know, what happened was so much different than what we were taught. And so the government schools have wanted kids to focus on this belief that Martin Luther King was an incredible hero for everything he did. He could do no wrong, and it's an eye opener once you realize that the civil rights movement, there was more to it than just this you know, this figure named Martin Luther King Jr. And so, anyways, thank you everybody for listening. And John, you know, you were on the conference call last week with one of our conference calls, so you're becoming an experienced guest on this podcast, and I thank you so much for participating. And if anybody needs to contact you, if anybody has questions, how can they contact you, John?
Yes, I'll give my cell phone number, which is 803-397-2968. And I also have my email address, which is my name, johnperna@gmail.com. No dot, no space, no underscore, just John Perna, like it was run together like one word, at gmail.com. I have a mailing list. I send out emails of various different sorts. I have a web page, which is targetfreedom.com. And most of the articles that I write will be posted up on targetfreedom.com and then sent out as an email to a specific list of people who are interested in receiving those. I also have an Amazon storefront and an eBay storefront and my own web page for books. I have Americanistbookstore.com is my bookstore's web page, and I don't have any books other than those that focus on the defense of liberty. And so I'm not the place where you could get a book about chess or cooking or something or other like that. But if it has to do with defense of liberty, I'm very likely to have it as long as there's not something offensive about it. There are some books that have to do with the defense of liberty that will have one page that rules it out from being on my book list. Same thing with the John Birch Society. You know, I years ago when I was dealing with Andy DeLint, who is now a member of the National Council of the John Birch Society, I had to convince Andy DeLint that the John Birch Society wasn't anti-Semitic, because he's an Orthodox Jew. And I brought the bookmobile to his house, and I handed him the book list of the John Birch Society, and I said, "You go through this book list and tell me what you would like to see. If it's not on this bookmobile, I'll get you a copy of it, and I want you to find anything on that book list that's anti-Semitic." And he could not find anything, and I told him, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you about the one book we have that has one page in it that is anti-Semitic. It's a 150-year-old book. It was written by Nesta Webster, and we don't distribute that book except with an insert into it, obiter dictum, pointing out that we don't agree with what's on that page.
Well, and you convinced him to join the John Birch Society, and that's yeah. been a great help to have Andy DeLynn on our council, and I'm always you're on the phone almost every week with Andy DeLynn, so I often hear from you about your conversations with him, and you've done a great job, John, you know, exposing the lies that are said about the John Birch Society, and reminding people that it's a welcoming organization for those who are wanting to keep liberty, you know, in America, to where we can live our lives freely and to live the Americanist lifestyle that so many Americans, you know, have fought and died for. So, John, always a pleasure. Yes. Thanks for doing what you do. And I'll likely have okay. you on this again, and I'll get this uploaded to the Bircher podcast. And we will, we'll just, everybody listening, if you could share this as much as you can, this is great education for people. And we do hope you like this. So those on this call, we're going to advance on to the Q&A session. This will not be recorded once we get into the Q&A session. So we're going to do that right now. And once again, thanks to all of you who have listened.